Aaron has invented what Aaron describes as not. It is happening across Northwest right now. This is their story. Preston sits among the most deprived constituencies in the country, where secondary schools struggle to fill physics teaching posts while graduates queue up for training places that no longer exist. The Department for Education suspended new admissions mid-year, citing budget constraints, while empty classrooms and unused equipment gather dust. Here is what Aaron saw when the system chose scarcity over sense.
I grew up on the Ribbleton estate, watching my mum mark books every evening after her shift as a teaching assistant. She'd sit at our kitchen table with piles of Year 3 reading assessments, a cup of tea going cold beside her, believing absolutely that every child deserved someone who cared about their learning. That belief shaped me more than I realized at the time. The moment I knew I wanted to teach came in Year 9, when Mr. Henderson explained quantum mechanics using nothing but a tennis ball and a cardboard box. He made particles disappear and reappear, showed us how observation changes reality, turned the impossible into something beautiful. I left that lesson buzzing with questions I'd never thought to ask. When I graduated from Lancaster with my physics degree, I wanted to give that same gift to other kids from estates like mine. Teaching felt like the most important work I could do. I applied to the University of Central Lancashire for their physics PGCE in September 2023. The admissions tutor, Dr. Sarah Matthews, was enthusiastic about my application. She told me the course was definitely running, but warned me about changes to the funding. Physics teacher training bursaries have been cut from £28,000 to £10,000, she said during my interview. Treasury spending constraints, I'm afraid. You'll need to consider additional loans. I took out the extra student loans without hesitation. £10,000 was still substantial support, and I was determined to make this work. The course started well. Our cohort was small but committed, 12 graduates spread across physics, chemistry, and biology. The teaching practice placements were inspiring. I spent mornings at local secondaries watching experienced teachers bring complex concepts to life, then afternoons in university seminars discussing pedagogy and lesson planning. 3 months in, everything changed. Dr. Matthews called an emergency meeting in November. She looked exhausted as she stood at the front of our seminar room. "I've just come off a call with the Department for Education," she began. "They're suspending new physics teacher training places mid-year. They say they've reached their recruitment target nationally." The room went silent. One of my course mates, Jenny, asked the obvious question, "What about us?" Dr. Matthews nodded quickly. "You can finish your course, but we won't be admitting new students for the next intake." I couldn't understand it. Our cohort was tiny. How could 12 trainees represent over-recruitment? I started asking questions. I visited my old secondary school, Longridge High, to speak with Mrs. Kumar, the head teacher. She walked me through the science corridor, pointing to 3 empty physics classrooms. "We desperately need teachers," she said, frustration clear in her voice. "I've been advertising for 18 months. We're using supply teachers and asking other staff to cover lessons outside their subjects, but there's no funding for training places." That phrase stuck with me. No funding for training places. I heard it everywhere. The local education authority repeated it. The regional schools commissioner's office repeated it. Everyone seemed to accept it as a fact of nature, like rainfall or gravity. But walking past the university's education building one afternoon, I saw something that didn't fit. The physics teacher training labs were locked and dark. Through the windows, I could see brand new smart boards, still in their packaging, stacked along the corridor like expensive monuments to unused potential. The building's car park, which Dr. Matthews had told me used to be full during peak training sessions, sat half empty. Security passes that used to grant access to 24 trainees now open doors for 12. I started to notice contradictions everywhere. The university had the capacity. The equipment was there. The academic staff were there, underutilized and frustrated. The schools were crying out for physics teachers. Graduates like me were queuing up to train. The only thing missing was the political decision to connect these pieces. The phrase, "there is no funding," began to sound different. I thought about what Dr. Matthews had actually said. Treasury spending constraints. Not "we cannot afford it," but Treasury spending constraints. The Treasury, which works for the government that issues the British pound, the government that creates money when it spends, was telling us it could not find enough money to train people who were standing ready to work. I started to understand that this was not an accounting problem. This was a political choice dressed up as financial impossibility. The people existed. I could see them in my cohort, in the corridors of other universities, in the job centres of Preston. The schools existed. I'd walked through their empty classrooms. The equipment existed. I'd seen it gathering dust. The knowledge existed. Dr. Matthews and her colleagues were experts in physics education, eager to share their expertise. What didn't exist was the political will to spend money into existence to connect these resources. Someone in Westminster had decided that 12 physics teachers were enough for the entire region, regardless of what head teachers were saying about their actual needs. I'm still here, still watching, still coaching under-12s football on weekends. But I understand something now that I didn't understand when I started. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train teachers for classrooms that were sitting empty. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact, it was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. The same logic as a household saying, "we cannot afford it," except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money, the limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and people who needed it. I know this is not just my story, it's the story of every constituency where graduates and empty classrooms exist side by side while someone in Westminster insists the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. It was deliberately kept locked.
What Aaron experienced has a name: cherry picking. This technique selects rare examples where spending allegedly failed to justify never spending, while ignoring overwhelming evidence of what happens when government does invest. It's like a tobacco company in the 1960s pointing to one smoker who lived to 95 while ignoring thousands who died of lung cancer, then claiming cigarettes must be harmless. In Aaron's story, officials cited isolated examples of teacher training programs that struggled while ignoring decades of evidence that properly funded teacher training produces teachers. They pointed to past instances where some trainees didn't complete their courses while ignoring the chronic teacher shortages devastating schools across Preston. They highlighted the cost of failed training places while ignoring the far greater cost of using expensive supply teachers and asking non-specialists to cover physics lessons. The austerity objection Aaron heard was, "look what happened to countries that overspent on public services." But countries that issue their own currency have never defaulted due to domestic spending. Greece, the standard example, used the euro and did not issue its own currency. Nordic countries with large public sectors have lower debt crises, not higher. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. In Preston, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Preston ranks 35 out of 543 English constituencies for deprivation, placing it in the most deprived decile nationally. English Indices of Deprivation 2025 MHCLG. The constituency hosts 3,193 registered charities, Charity Commission Register. Total grants received amount to £200.4 million, 360 giving Grant Navars. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.